setting is something that a lot of confusion about. There's nothing wrong with having a goal as long as you don't fall in love with it. And as long as you understand that every step on the way to the achievement of the goal is just as important as every other step, including the one wherein you reach it. That we only get nows, we only get present moments to live. And that to want to be something 5 years from now assumes that you're going to be here then, in this body, in the way that you are living now. And that's a very blatant assumption, that if you always have that five-year notion, there will come a time when you won't be able to achieve that, because the future is promised to no one, and the past is a canceled check. I mean, it's just gone. Right? So that all we have are moments to live.
One of the things that's important to learn how to do is to act as if what you want is already there. To act that way. Not to act as if, maybe if I set all these goals and work real hard at them. You see, when I said that success is an inner concept, so is happiness, so is love, so is approval. If you think that you're going to find fulfillment if you set a goal out there, and then you work real, real hard for that goal, and when you get there, you'll finally have it, your life is all this striving. What you need is a psychology of arriving. Not striving. You know, you're thinking about what I'm going to do and I'm going to get here. Meantime, every one of these days are your life. This is all you get. So the goals, while there's nothing wrong with goals at all, it's like every step along the way is just as important to savor as arriving here. And if you're only goal-oriented and only striving, you're only about halfway up the ladder of no limit people. You are always going to suffer from the disease of more. If you only have goals to arrive at in the future. Because this becomes your life, this striving, striving, striving. And when you get here, you don't know what to do with this. You don't know how to handle what you've got. So then you upgrade your goal. You say, all right, I'll have 200,000 in the bank instead of 100,000. And now your life becomes more struggling, more suffering, more trying to get there, trying to get there. And you get here, and then you all of a sudden you look around and you're an old person. And you say, what happened to my life? Not becoming.
There's nothing in the world wrong with pursuing anything as long as you stay consistent with the truth. The truth is the most important thing you can have in your life. If you become a person, if you want anything to work on in your life, work on this. Everything that comes out of your mouth, every word that comes out of your mouth is exactly as it is and exactly as you are. That's a wonderful place to try to get to. Right. Now, that can be construed as a goal, right, in the goal-setting sense. But each time that you slip doesn't mean you're less than valuable, that you're unimportant. It doesn't mean that at all. It simply means that you have something to learn from slipping. And so, in this moment, appreciate what you have to learn from slipping, rather than saying, I shouldn't have and I failed and that makes me bad and now I'm deficient and so on. You see, the more you operate from goal-setting in the sense of repairing deficiencies, the more your life becomes one of striving. Your life becomes a striving. And when you arrive at the place where you want it to be, you don't know how to be there because your whole life has been striving. If it's a week from Thursday, you're looking toward whatever it is, that party or the bank account that you're going to now have the amount of money that you wanted in it, and you finally get there after all the struggling, and then Thursday arrives, you don't know how to deal with that because your whole life has been in anticipation of. And so when you get there, you suffer from this disease called more. And I've got to get more of that. There's a lot of people out there, including many of you, who, while you're having your first cup of coffee, are thinking about the second cup. Or while you're having your appetizer, are wondering if you're going to be able to get a dessert. And all of this stuff called appetizer and your main course and all of that is something you just sort of forget about, don't experience, in anticipation of what it's going to be in the next moment, in the next moment. Now, the highest form of sanity that's out there and available for all of us is this present moment. The now, and making a peak experience, being able to make a peak experience out of a present moment, out of any present moment. Now, I read a book called The Idiot one time by Fyodor Dostoevsky. All right? Dostoevsky lived in the 1860s in Russia under the Tsar. Now, here's what happened to Dostoevsky. It's a true story. He was accused of being in alliance with a literary group of people in the Soviet Union in Moscow who were attempting to overthrow the Tsar by talking about subversive ideas like freedom and people have a right to think for themselves and make choices, and all the kinds of things that I've written about, for which I would have been executed many, many times over in most countries of the world. Well, Dostoevsky was a member of a small group. The Tsar said that he was a member. This was long before he was well known. This is when he was a young man. Right? He was sentenced to die. And he was put into a cell in Moscow. And in that cell, he knew that he was going to be dying, and he had been told the date. He was going to be shot by a firing squad. And so they took five of them out, and they lined them up, and they put them in a stake. And they took a black shroud, and they wrapped it around each one of these five people's eyes. And the Tsar's guards shot the first man and killed him, and he got to watch that and witness that. Then they put the shroud around, and then they shot him. And he was next. He was the next man in line to die. Dostoevsky, the writer of Crime and Punishment, some of the greatest books ever written. Okay. And he was pardoned by the Tsar at the last moment and assigned to 10 years in prison at hard labor. And for some reason, he was spared at that moment, and the other two were also spared. Now, that's a true story. Dostoevsky, in writing in The Idiot, talks about the value of the present moment and learning how to get consumed in it. And when he saw a cockroach in his cell that where he had been condemned to die, and he saw, it wasn't an annoyance. It wasn't some creature that was filthy that he didn't want. It was a miracle. Now, a lot of people,
the old saying is that life is what happens to you while you're making other plans. And you must understand that every moment in your life is a miracle to be lived. That you must stop looking for miracles in something in the future. And that not falling in love with your plan means that if you want to get someplace, terrific. Enjoy every step along the way. And then if you want to alter that, let's say you want to be a physician. You're young and you go to school and you went and all that, and then you realize, no, I don't think I want to go to medical school. That doesn't have to be a horrendous kind of letdown or a failure of some kind. You simply say, I think I'll move in this direction now. I'm moving. And every day you have to live fully rather than suffering or postponing your gratification or postponing your purpose in the pursuit of something in the future which may or may not arrive for you, and if it does, you'll very likely be a completely different person anyway. That's one of the hard things to understand. Heraclitus said, there's nothing permanent but change, you know. Change is the only thing there always is, including all of us all the time. So if you set a goal for yourself for a long time, you have to understand that you're going to be very, very different from the person that you are now. I had a good friend who was an internist, and he was in his 40s, and he said to me, you know, it's this practice, it's just getting to me. I'm owned by it, I'm making a lot of money and all that, but I don't want to do this. I want to be a sportscaster. He wanted to broadcast and wanted to practice on high school teams, and he'd always wanted to give that a try where he could be his own boss and not be a slave to it and all that. I said, well, why are you pursuing this, you know, you're a physician and all that, but why would you want to continue doing that? He said, well, I decided a long time ago that I was going to be a physician and that I can't change that now. I'm a doctor, and I said, who decided that you were going to be a physician? He said, well, I was 18 years old, and I made that decision. I said, would you go to an 18-year-old today to get vocational guidance for where you should be going in your life? Would you consult a teenager for that? He said, why, of course not. I said, well, isn't that what you're doing? If you're not happy and not being fulfilled in what you're doing in this moment, you have the option to change that, and you don't have to be attached to what you've been. What you've been is just the choices that you made then. And if you don't want to make those choices now, and I can hear a collective rumbling in America as I say that, which is, yes, but I have responsibilities. Yes, but I have a mortgage. Yes, but, and there's a lot of those yes buts. And I say to you that if you have always been responsible and paid your bills, then that is who you are, and that's what you ought to consult. Rather than someone who is telling yourself that a disaster is on the way, if you make a choice to be something that you never dreamt you could be, when I left the professorship, and I left an opportunity to have tenure for the rest of my life, and a lot of external kind of security, and resigned, and went across the country to talk about erroneous zones back in 1976. Everyone told me how insane that I was. But I've never listened to what everyone else said, because you have to listen to who you are. And I knew that no matter what, my inner voice has told me this is what I have to do. And you can't stop someone who knows they have to do it from doing it. The irony of that is that I made more money, and I never even tried to. I never thought I'd make money writing, because I'd already written a whole lot of books that didn't make any money, textbooks and so on. And writing was just something that I am. And it wasn't anything I could quit, stop. I didn't want to. I loved it. I felt fulfilled and so on when I wrote. And I knew that I was leaving footprints and all of those things. The irony is that after I finally resigned and did what I wanted to do, I made more money in the first year that I went out and did what I really believed in and loved than I had made the entire 35 years previously of my life, my whole life. In 1 year, I made more money. And that isn't because I was lucky. That isn't because I'm Wayne Dyer and I had any opportunity. I didn't have any more opportunity than anybody else. In fact, I had less. I came from complete poverty and many years in foster homes and orphanages and having to earn my own way through everything. Wasn't that at all. It was when you advance confidently in the direction of your own dreams, and you go out there to live the life that you have imagined. Success will chase you and arrive in your life in external forms in an amount sufficient to take care of your needs. It will happen for you. As long as you stay there and tell yourself you've got to continue to do something you've always done it because you've always done it, then the only payoff you get for that is to defend your misery. It's like arguing for your limitations. The only thing you get are your limitations. And the people who love you, care about you, your family and so on, will support you consulting your inner voices and your inner signals and doing what it is that you know you have to do. And if you picture yourself being successful at it and you know that it's going to work and you won't let any other image into you, it will get stored away within you exactly the same as if you were out working on it. And if you guide yourself by that image and just won't let that image out, you can't not make it happen. You can't. It's that law of the universe, because an image gets stored away the same as an experience. And every obstacle you just see as an opportunity to see what I've got to do to shift and to do it. Meantime, you're feeling purposeful and you're being purposeful. You're no longer looking for a purpose. You are your purpose.
It seems that we're smart to pursue an idea of something we want to accomplish, something we want to be very much, even though it may be risky, even though we may be taking chances, risking failure, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And we need to do that even though we cannot see how we're going to succeed yet. Even though the whole distance may still be hidden, we still need to try. We still need to encourage ourselves to try.
You just need to do. That's the key word, to do. Even trying is a myth. Without being nitpicking, you can't try anything. If I say to you, there's this pen sitting on this table in front of us, and I say to you, all right, what I want you to do is try to pick up this pen. Now, here we go, okay? Now, in reality, all of this trying is called not picking up the pen. It's just not up yet. And then when I do this and I pick it up, there's the pen up in the air. The trying is man's invention. It's the doing. It's the doing that is important. And yes, risk-taking is phenomenal. And I use the word myself. I have in a chapter in my book on raising children called I Want Them to Become Risk-Takers. And yet I don't believe it's risky at all. I believe the risk is only our evaluation of it. And that the real risk, other than putting your life in jeopardy and jumping in front of a moving train and foolish things like that, which I'm not talking about here, the risk is, there's several. One is that I will fail. All right, let's look at that. You can't succeed unless you're willing to fail. And you can't always be better than everybody else, because if you're a winner by having to defeat everybody else, then you'll always be a loser, because no one can always defeat everybody else, no matter how great they are. So that's not a good definition of winning at all. I've often talked about Babe Ruth hitting 60 home runs in 1927, the year he struck out more than anybody in the history of baseball, the same year. If you want to hit home runs, you have to be willing to strike out. And failing at something is just an opportunity, if you're looking at it the way I'm talking about it, just an opportunity to see where you are and to assess who you are. And if you're having to look over your shoulder at somebody else to decide how you're doing, then somebody else's performance is determining who you are and how well you're doing. That's called competition. enlightened people don't look at other people to determine where they are. They say, that's the person, and that's how they're running, and that's where they are in their music development or whatever it is. And that has nothing to do with me. Where I am is how I decide to believe. Now, there's nothing wrong with getting out there and competing in a tennis match or in a golf match or in bowling or in anything in life. But to understand that it's not to evaluate who you are and how valuable you are, but just to see how you stack up to somebody else, that's fine. And when it's over, it's over. That's one big risk. And when you get to a point where failure is something you welcome, because that's how you learn. You don't learn much from success except to stay the same. But when you fail at something, it's a wonderful experience because it gives you an opportunity to grow. To me, that's not risky at all, even though to many people it is, this whole business of failing. The other fear is that I won't be liked, or that somebody won't approve of me. Well, the enlightened people are independent of the good opinion of other people. They are not functioning and running their life based on what others think or say or tell them to do, but instead on what my own inner lights tell me to do, with the morality of, as long as I'm not hurting anybody else or interfering with anyone else's right to run their life as they choose, then anything that I do is okay. That's all morality is. Your right to swing your fist and flail around stops with my right to have my nose shaped the way I want it to be shaped. That's it. And so that's the only morality there is. And so you go out into the world and you are who you choose to be. And you know that some people will like it and some people won't. And the people who love you the most will probably dislike what you do the most, 50% of the time. And if you're trying to run your life based on what everybody else is saying or thinking or feeling, or then you can never get anything done, because there's always going to be somebody, a large number of somebodies, who are going to dislike it. And every great idea comes from an innovator. And innovators are people who do things differently. They're not trying to please everybody else. Because when you think about it, if you try to please everyone else, if you try to be just like everyone else, what do you have to offer? If you're just like everyone else, you just have sameness to offer. It's your uniqueness. After a while, you begin to say, that's just okay. And in fact, even in my own relationship with my wife, if we have disagreements now, there was a time if she would disagree with something that I would believe, I would be upset about that. Not immobilize or anything, but like, how could you not agree with who I... Now, if we talk and she disagrees with them, I just say, that's her. That's who she is. That's what she believes. And she doesn't understand me, and that's okay. The greatest understanding you can have, if you want to be enlightened, is that no one will ever understand you. Because you're unique. You're special. You are a unique creation, and no one can ever get behind your eyeballs and see things as you do. You are always alone with who you are, and yet never lonely if you like the person you're alone with. So those risks stop being risks after a while. They're only risks to people who are just starting out on the path, who are just beginning to find out how easy all of this is and how perfect it all is. And the further along you go, the less risk there is. It just doesn't matter anymore whether you fail or whether somebody doesn't like it or whether or not it fits in. Those things just don't matter anymore. And they become less and less and less risky and just easier and easier and easier to just be what you know you have to be.